Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. Sometimes it's the great debate, but it can only be either if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. The number to dial is 442086014555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us, and I'll have to move swiftly on. You can also SMS the show on 447800008066, and the best of those will come up here on the comment wall. Ditto with emails, and the email address is comment@presstv.co.uk. You can even tweet me at comment_PressTV, and you can continue to debate the show on that Twitter account afterwards. Tonight we have two questions, though inextricably linked, they might as well be one question. The first is this: who is really behind Jaish al-Fatah? You may not yet have heard of them, and indeed you kind of don't need to. Because when I tell you that Jaish al-Fatah is a repackaged and renamed al-Nusra Front, you'll know I'm talking about al-Qaeda. You could call it putting lipstick on the beast that is al-Qaeda in Syria. The lipstick won't make it look any prettier, won't change its character, it'll still be a beast. But al-Fatah is funded by the same old, same old. If I tell you that the funds and the weapons are coming from the Persian Gulf Arab countries that have sown such murder and mayhem over the last 4 years, nearly 5 years in Syria, you'll get the picture. But the big question is, are these satrapies of the United States of America doing this despite the disapproval of the United States and its Western allies, or is it all a game? I ask because you heard it here first from me. I say it's a game. And that is an idea whose time has come. The Guardian newspaper this week, fully 1 week after I said so here on this show, raised the question of whether or not the Western allies who are supposedly fighting ISIS and al-Qaeda in Syria, and for that matter in Iraq, are really actually fighting on their side. Seamus Milne, probably the finest journalist operating in Britain today, laid out bare, based on this 2012 United States intelligence report, marked secret, but secret no more. I was in receipt of this very same document just a little bit earlier. And it was what I found there that concretized, solidified a suspicion that I had been nursing for years. And the objective as well as subjective facts, when all laid out in a row, as they partly are in this three-year-old intelligence document, leave little room for doubt. Plus, I have another question, which Seamus Milne didn't pose, perhaps doesn't yet see the significance of, and I'll come to that in a minute. But let me give you the highlights, the lowlights of the United States intelligence document. August the 12th of 2012. And it's destined for all the usual suspects: Homeland Security, Department of State, CIA, United States Military, the Joint Staffs, and so on and so on. It's a Department of Defense document, and it says this on the very first material page. Internally, events are taking a clear sectarian direction, 2012. And if I flip over to these quotes, you'll find them useful. If the situation unravels, there is the possibility of establishing, not that there might be established, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria to isolate the Syrian regime. The author goes on, the ideal atmosphere for Al-Qaeda in Iraq to return to its old pockets in Mosul and Ramadi, 2012, remember, years before Mosul and now Ramadi were captured, and will provide a renewed momentum under the presumption of unifying the jihad among Sunni Iraq and Syria. And it goes on. ISIL, they call it ISI, we call it ISIL, could also declare an Islamic State through its union with other organizations in Iraq and Syria. The renewing facilitation of terrorist elements from all over the world re-entering the Iraqi arena. Well, that's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that all the people on the receiving end of this intelligence report in August of 2012 were at least, at best, warned of exactly what has taken place and did nothing to stop it. At worst, and that's my reading of the document, they are deeply complicit in all those events that are foretold 3 years ago, almost exactly 3 years ago, and have come to pass. I'm laboring that point because it segues neatly into the second question. Why didn't the US stop ISIL taking over Ramadi? Well, in a way, I've just given you the answer. If my thesis is correct, the US want ISIL in power in Ramadi, and they want ISIL in power in Mosul. They probably don't want ISIL in power in Baghdad. They probably don't want ISIL in power in Damascus, but they want them in power everywhere in between. They want what they call a buffer state between the Islamic Republic of Iran and between Damascus and Lebanon and Palestine. The fact that that buffer state will be, in their own words, an Al-Qaeda state, an ISIL state, a sectarian state, a heart-eating, head-chopping, Christian church-burning, crucifying, murdering, torturing bunch of madmen, the likes of which have never been seen since Genghis Khan stormed Baghdad a millennium ago, is of absolutely no concern of theirs. Unless, of course, they have guarantees that their interests will not be disturbed. And their primary interest, of course, in the region is the state that they call Israel. And this leads me to the point I alone am making in Britain now, but I suspect I will not be alone in making it for long. If there really was a hostile, hostile, fanatic Takfiri front closing in on Damascus, closing in on Baghdad. Don't you think Israel would have something to say about it? Don't you think Israel would be moved to do something about it? Don't you think Netanyahu would be at the United Nations now showing us diagrams of how these heart-eating, head-chopping, crucifying madmen were about to take power in the country next door to the stolen land that he governs? Don't you think they'd be pressing the alarm buttons? Don't you think they'd be demanding that the world act before Ayman al-Zawahiri, the new leader of Al-Qaeda, or the so-called self-appointed Caliph Baghdadi, was in power in the country next door to them? You see, for me, this is an unanswerable point. And it's the unanswerable point that is the last straw that breaks the camel's back of the credibility of the so-called Western allies' fight against ISIL. There's a gang up against Syria and against Iraq. They are being engulfed, drowned in tens, scores, maybe hundreds of thousands of foreign fighters, armed and financed by the United States satrapies in the Arab countries on the Persian Gulf. They are supported by the neighboring country of Jordan, whatever its protestations to the contrary. And these fanatics can drown Iraq and Syria in blood, as far as the United States is concerned, because the only thing that matters to them is to defend Israel, to defend what they call Saudi Arabia, and to keep Iran in a box. That's my view. What's yours? Ziad's on the line already from Michigan in the United States. He wants to answer my question. Who is really behind Jaish al-Fatah? Ziad, go ahead, sir.
Jaish al-Fatah, George, as you probably know, was announced in a communique on March 24th, 2015. And it's an organization and a coalition made up of seven different terrorist groups, the main one being al-Qaeda, which goes by the name or the moniker of Jabhat al-Nusra in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It is al-Qaeda. It already declares allegiance to al-Qaeda. And Abu Muhammad al-Jawlani, who is their leader, and we think he's their leader. He might have been killed some years ago, but he appeared on Al Jazeera last Wednesday in an interview where he tried to sort of soft soap the message of al-Qaeda by making it sound as though they are not a globalist terrorist network. The fact of the matter is there are seven organizations. Two of them are big, Ahrar al-Sham and Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, and they represent approximately, some people have estimated, 60,000 troops, all being directed right now by Americans, Turkish officers, British officers in Adana and Gaziantep, and also in Şirlik at the big base there, the NATO base. And the Syrian military intelligence is constantly collecting evidence showing that the Turks, the British, and the Americans are complicit in directing their assaults on the Syrian
people. Your vice president rather unwisely declared that in public at Harvard University just some months ago.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. He admitted that Saudi Arabia was, in fact, the Arabians of the peninsula were financing these terrorists.
And Turkey
and
was facilitating.
He apologized for it after it was called on the carpet, yeah.
Now, Ziad, this is what they used to call in the United States, long before you were born, the $64,000 question.
Oh, no, I'm 64 years old.
Okay, you just sound young. Now, Ziad, George Orwell couldn't make this up. The United States, which was attacked by al-Qaeda, which had the Twin Towers demolished in front of all of our eyes, and which lost thousands of its citizens, murdered by al-Qaeda, now has its officers in Syria coordinating the military effort of Al-Qaeda. Do you have any politicians in the United States? Do you have any media in the United States? Is there anyone with a brain and a pen or a typewriter in the United States that might bring this extraordinary news to the attention of the people of the United States or not?
Americans, by and large, are like Roman citizens. You give them bread and you give them games. And until they're directly affected by something, then they, generally speaking, act in a very bovine sort of way. Ovine, almost.
So they don't know and don't want to know that
they
the people who attacked the United States on 9/11 are now not just your allies, but that your officers and my country's officers are actually in the front line directing these people?
Absolutely in cahoots with them, yes. Their operations are planned by the Turks, the British, and the Americans in the north of Syria. The attack on Idlib and Jisr al-Shughur and Ariha all were conducted under the control and the supervision of the Turkish officers who were actually seen. There was Turkish artillery fired at the Syrian army. We know for a fact that in Kesab, which is in the Latakia province, the Turks were visibly, observed, directing artillery against Syrian forces during the time when they were trying to recapture Kesab. I mean, the involvement of NATO is open and obvious. There is no one in any trial, any court of law, and I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for 35 years. I can prove the complicity of Britain and the United States and Turkey in this outrageous war crime with great ease, and I have the documents to prove it, and I think probably if you look in the internet and the various news sources, the evidence is extremely obvious.
Well, I don't know if you're aware, Ziad, but a case collapsed in the English courts this very week where a man was about to be tried. He was about to appear in court. He was, I think, in the holding cell, about to come up into the dock, charged with serious terrorist offenses, when the Crown, that is the state here, abandoned the case with the jury assembled and the judge in his place, his wig powdered. They abandoned the case because the man's defense was that he was working for exactly the terrorist organizations in Syria that the British government was arming and financing, and that he was ready to blow the entire picture in front of the press and the public, the jury and the court system, at which point the case was abandoned and the man has gone free. Now, this is Alice in Wonderland. The British and American governments protest how anti-terrorist they are. They arrest people for even going with aid and coming back to Britain on terrorism charges whilst they are themselves financing, arming, organizing, tactically advising, strategically inspiring these very same terrorist organizations. What's it all about? What's the end game, Ziad?
What's that? The end game?
Yeah, what's the end game?
The end game is you don't want to get Russia to believe that the red line has been crossed in the north of Syria, because that will be the ultimate end game. Putin has made it very clear to Obama, and Obama understands this, that Russia views American intervention in Syria as an intervention in Russia, that is an attack on Moscow. And even their defense minister, General Shigoy, was in Washington, told Martin Dempsey exactly the same thing, that there's a red line to be crossed. Right now, we are very close to it, because as you see, Iran has begun sending troops now via Latakia into the battle in Idlib and, of course, in northern Latakia.
Well, why not? Why not? If everyone else is, why shouldn't Iran? Why shouldn't Russia?
The Russians are extremely legalistic about this. They want to play the game according to the international law. They've been very strict about following rules, the UN Charter, you know, for example, in the way they annexed Crimea was extremely legalistic, and it's very hard to attack the way they did, in fact, annex Crimea. Ukraine, another example. The Russian army, as you know, could literally wipe out the Ukrainian army probably in 8 hours.
Yes.
And yet they have not done that. They are not going to do that because they are following the rules. And the same is true in Syria. The Russians have agreed with the United States after the deal was made about Syria's chemical weapons that neither side would intervene directly in the conflict there. So Obama finds that very comforting. He can now use his proxies to do exactly what he wants, while the Russians are being very legalistic about taking the matter to the United Nations. At some point in time, Mr. Putin is going to have to lose, he's going to have his feathers ruffled a little bit, and he's going to have to take some steps towards, you know, equalizing the situation.
But let me ask you one last question. You've been very helpful. The last question is this. Given the dynamics on the ground, it cannot be ruled out at all that the regime in Damascus will fall and that these people will be in power. How is that in the interests of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel next door? How?
Two reasons. One is that the U.S. is committed to helping Saudi Arabia and Qatar to develop a Sunni buffer state between Iraq and Syria, as you said very perspicaciously earlier. The idea here is not just merely to distance Iran from Hezbollah and Lebanon, but also to create an area where the gas pipeline, which is it's just an obsessive point with the Qataris, can be extended through to Tartus in Syria for then transport to Europe. The Qataris, their entire life and existence depends on natural gas. They know that if Iran is able to extend that gas pipeline through Iraq to Syria, they're finished in the long haul. So as a matter of fact, the United States is not only interested in protecting Israel, but also interested in keeping Iran away economically, preventing Iran from expanding its influence, and certainly preventing Iran from arming both Syria and Lebanon and giving them the kind of tactical depth, strategic depth they really need.
Ziad, if I ever need an attorney in Michigan, you're definitely the man I'm going to hire. Thanks for that, helping the case for the prosecution that I'm seeking to make. Hassan is in the United Kingdom on the same subject. Hassan, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam. Go ahead.
Well, to be very honest, I'm always confused about the mess in the world that's happening these days.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
Go on. You're on the air.
And sometimes I think that we know the answer, and most of the time I think we don't know the answer. The answer which we think we know is that there is a war between big powers and the small countries, they suffer. You know, the local people, the innocent people, they die. So just like it was a war between America and Russia, and who suffered? In Afghanistan, people suffered. They fought their war in Afghanistan, right? So in the same way, this is a war between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and, you know, they are fighting not directly, but, you know, in other different countries through these small groups, you know, and each country is supporting their own groups. That's the problem. And I don't understand what's wrong with these, what's wrong with their mentality that we, as a Muslim, no matter Shia or Sunni or any other sect, we are living here happily in this country, in United Kingdom or in America or in even other European countries, happily together, you know, there is no problem at all. But what's wrong with them that they cannot live together with each other and they are killing each other? That's the thing. This is what I always think about. Another thing I want to mention, which is very important for you to highlight, please, that is my request, that nobody talked about the Muslims of Burma, you know, who have been killed daily basis. What I've heard that 28,000 have been killed, you know, women have been raped, children have been burned out. So nobody talked about that. So I don't understand why. Why not them? Are they not humans or what?
Well, uncannily, Hassan, I was just about to answer your points with precisely that one. I myself have, for the last at least 3 years, been highlighting the genocide which is being practiced against the Rohingya people for no other reason than that they are Muslims. And because they're Muslims, their blood is cheap. Because the West is not interested in their blood, at least not as interested as it is in the money that they can earn through trading with the junta in Burma, and the Muslim countries are not interested in their blood either. They're too busy shedding each other's blood everywhere else, it seems, in the Ummah. It's a very, very, very dark and disturbing vision that this Ramadan, the Rohingya will be dodging knives that seek to murder them, or on board boats that are ready to take them to a watery grave. I'll be back, God willing, 3 minutes from now after a short news bulletin. Don't go away. Watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're talking about the so-called Jaish al-Fatah, the lipstick that's been put on the beast that was known as al-Qaeda. The Jabhat al-Nusra is the al-Qaeda franchise in Syria. Its leader is Ayman al-Zawahri. Its former leader was Osama bin Laden, and he's now our best friend. Mr. Zawahri has given an assurance to Western countries that their interests will not be in any way damaged by the victory of Jaish al-Fatah, otherwise known as al-Qaeda, in Syria. Well, if you believe that, you'll believe anything, unless, of course, there is really something sinister going on behind the scenes and that they are openly in league with each other. That's what I suspect. It's not what everyone believes, but that's what this show is for, to debate and to go where others fail to go. Because you see, this debate will not take place in any of the so-called mainstream media outlets in the United Kingdom or in any other Western country. Mo's on the line in the UK. Let's see what he has to say about ISIL taking over Ramadi. Mo, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George.
Hi there, go ahead.
George, I hope you'll give me the right to reply, not like last week where you cut me off and said something I did not say.
I'll decide that when I've heard what you have to say, so go ahead.
Yeah, you must respect your callers, George, and give them the right to reply.
That depends whether I consider them worthy of respect, but go ahead, you're wasting time.
Okay. Why didn't the U.S. stop ISIL taking over Ramadi? In 2001, the NSA came up with a secret report that Saudi Arabia was potentially going to fall because there's high unemployment among the youth and there was going to be an uprising in Saudi Arabia. So what they've done is all the fighters that are coming into Iraq and Syria are mostly Saudi Arabian youth who are being paid to fight there, so that they don't destroy the Saudi Arabian monarchy. So this is what's really happening, is that they're being supported in terms of intelligence, logistics, and equipment to destroy Iraq and Syria so they don't destroy Saudi Arabia. And this is what you must discuss, is all these volunteers coming from Europe into Iraq and Syria. There are also Englishmen and Americans who say they're against the so-called ISIL, and you're not talking about them. These are also people who must be prosecuted when they return back to their homes.
Well, you're factually wrong. The biggest contingent of foreign fighters fighting on the side of ISIL are not Saudis. In fact, they are from the Maghreb. They are the largest number from Algeria, the second largest number from Tunisia. Some of them are Libyans. There are Muslims from all over the world who are joining the ranks of ISIL. There are thousands of them from Europe, 1,000 of them at least from the United Kingdom. Most of them are not returning. Many of them are being killed. But your essential point is correct, and it squares exactly with the thesis I laid out in the earlier part of the program, which is that the country they call Saudi Arabia, it's not a name that I accept. I don't believe in calling countries after families. It's never a good idea. It's not a good look. But the preservation of these United States satrapies in the Persian Gulf, and you mentioned Saudi Arabia as the principal one, and the preservation of what they call Israel, are vital interests of the United States, the United Kingdom, and other Western allies. And there is no doubt that Saudi Arabia has provided an ideological wellspring for the mentality which spawned Al-Qaeda, which spawned ISIL. 13 of the 19 Al-Qaeda hijackers on 9/11 were Saudi citizens. They have provided not just the ideological wellspring, but a treasure trove, as indeed they did in Afghanistan throughout the 1980s, and of course, the weaponry. The United States and Britain are selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, which, before they're even unpacked, are being transported to these Takfiri fanatics in Iraq and Syria. So there you go, Mo, we didn't have to fall out, and you don't need to reply. I'm talking about ISIL taking over Ramadi, and I'm talking about Jaish al-Fatah, the new name for Al-Qaeda in Syria, who are now, believe it or not, Britain and America's very best friends. Osman is in Pakistan. Let's hear from him. Osman, welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Go ahead, sir.
I want to talk about ISIS. You mentioned United States, why United States want ISIS to take Ramadi and Mosul and elsewhere, but not Baghdad. And you talk about the buffer state, buffer zone. Why just United States and Israel? Why not their facilitators in region, like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, Jordan, Turkey?
I'm not disputing that for one moment.
But
these are servants. These are servants.
Israel is not doing anything. They are on their borders. Well, in reality, nobody is doing anything. Saudi Arabia is not doing anything against. Turkey is not doing anything.
Well, they are. They're on the side of these people. They're paying for it all.
Yes.
And Turkey is making it happen.
But how United States and Israel can pursue their interests without them?
They can't. They have servants. They have servants in the region. And you've just named them. You've saved me from doing so.
Yes,
Thanks for the call. I'm going to Canada, where Omar is on the line. Go ahead, Omar.
Hey, George. Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir. Go ahead.
Regarding to the second point, that why they don't stop ISIL from advancing Ramadi. It's very clear how will they gonna attack the missionaries that they train, they fund for their own use. Their own interest in the region. The point is, they attack where they want to demolish infrastructure, and they don't, when they don't feel that it's going to be on their benefit, and it's all going on for their own interest and the Zionist interest.
Well, you've got it absolutely correct. As I said here last week, if you recall what happened to the retreating Iraqi army when it left Kuwait on the so-called Road of Death and up Mutla Ridge, it is inconceivable, given especially the advances in military technology and intelligence in the 25 years since then, it is absolutely impossible to believe that the United States did not know that ISIL were on the march, on the move, to storm and take Ramadi. It's equally impossible to believe that if they had wanted to, they could not have incinerated those ISIL columns as they did the Iraqi army 25 years ago in the back on its way out of Kuwait. Omar, thanks for the call. You're bang on. Rahman is in South Africa. He wants to talk about the same subject. Rahman, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum to you, John.
Walaikum assalam. Go on, sir.
My problem is that the Sikh Muslims must try and wake up from their slumber. They must stop going to Mecca and give status to those pagans that are ruling there. The Muslims must start reading the Quran more instead of going for pilgrimage. They want to cry about jihad, jihad, jihad. Yet they've got the opportunity to fight a real jihad in Myanmar, as you said, where Muslims are killed just because they are Muslims.
Mm.
Where these pagan Arabs and pagan Muslims killing each other all in the name of God. They don't even know what's the definition of jihad. They must learn to separate between state and between politics and religion. These illiterate Muslims must go back to the Holy Book and read it with wisdom and understanding. I like your description when you said about the lipstick. It's like in the West, whether you call it ham or whether you call it bacon, it's still a pig that they are eating. The same with these Muslims. No matter what they call themselves, Shia, Sunni, they must learn to go back to the Quran and read it with understanding and with an open mind.
Ameen.
Whilst they
Ameen.
The Quran, they will...
Rahman, I really couldn't put that better myself, and I'm not going to try. God bless you. Declan is on the line in the United Kingdom. Declan, welcome.
Hello, George.
Hello.
You made the point about politicians and the media. Now, as I actually said personally to you about 2 months ago, I don't think the politicians really care. So, for example, when that soldier Lee Rigby was killed in London, I don't think David Cameron really cared about it. That he, I don't think he was really horrified. And they certainly don't care whatsoever about the civilians of Syria. If you turn the clock back to Lebanon, Sabra and Shatila, when the Palestinians and Shias were massacred there, again, no, these leaders didn't really care. It's
I know, Declan. Of course, it's a powerful point you make, and I expect you to make it. But it is a legitimate question that I asked our friend in Michigan, surely. Is it really true that nobody in Parliament, nobody in the media, nobody in the Congress, nobody in the US media cares that we're now fighting a war alongside Al-Qaeda? Really?
I didn't say nobody, but to Mr. Obama and Mr. Netanyahu and those gangsters who run Saudi Arabia, these things are minor irritants at best. The media, they concentrate on Jihadi John or stupid stories like him. Jihadi John, all he does is murder people who are handcuffed. So kind of anybody could do that. What the media do is they put tons of lipstick on these pigs, as in Idlib, for example, with the white helmets, who take the dead away after al-Nusra kill them. The first thing these liberators did in Idlib was to destroy the monument of Ibrahim Hanano, who resisted the French in 1945. So how can you be a liberator when you're against a person who actually liberated your country? As regards Israel, Israel are actually hands-on, not hands-off. They've helped al-Nusra in the Golan Heights attack members of the United Nations, in particular the soldiers of Fiji and also the Philippines, to try to get them out of the Golan Heights so that al-Nusra could further destabilize Syria. Al-Nusra are not a threat to Israel because, and actually as regards al-Nusra, you know, any army, it has to replenish its arms and all the rest of it because they wear out, right? And so the question is, how can all these people, how can those proxy groups replenish their transport and so on? And the reason, as you see in those beautiful Toyota pickup trucks they have, is they're being helped all along the way by Turkey, by Israel, by America, etc.
Now, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Got to press on, yeah, just because of the pressure of calls tonight, which is record levels. Shujat is in London. Let's hear from him. Welcome, Shujat.
Yeah, I'm not entirely in agreement with your thesis, which you propounded just now, because you're saying that the USA is trying to bolster ISIL and to protect them, give them strength to conquer, finish off the Iraqi army. I'm not too sure that's entirely correct. I mean, with all due respect, don't you agree that all these fundamentalist so-called Takfiri elements, the Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra Front, and the Boko Haram, and now this ISIL, they are just the indication that this century belongs to militant Islam. All these Muslim countries, Muslim entities are uniting together to fight American oppression, Western oppression, decades of oppression that the Americans have gone through with them.
Which Muslim countries are fighting American oppression?
No, all these countries where these Takfiri militants are now operating, where they've come up from, there's, you know, Afghanistan, Pakistan,
yeah,
North, as you say, Maghreb, North Africa, mm-hmm, even Nigeria, Africa, Libya, and this Yemen, where they're all coming from there, the Ashar militants in Somalia, Al-Nusra in parts of Iraq.
Yes,
and
yes. What I'm saying to you is this, that ISIL took over Mosul. They took over Ramadi. They had to move in order to do so. Nobody attacked them when they were moving. The bombing by the so-called coalition is desultory, to say the least. As an American leading general pointed out, it was one-tenth of the bombardment suffered by Yugoslavia in Europe in the 1990s. The only time that there has been a serious effort made by this coalition against ISIL is when ISIL threatened the interests of and the territory controlled by their Kurdish allies in Kobani and in Erbil. Everywhere else, the effort has been of a different order, to quote the US general, to that which was expended against the Milosevic regime in Yugoslavia. And there is no doubt at all that the United States knew that Ramadi was going to be engulfed just a couple of weeks ago. They did nothing about it. That tells me that they want it to happen. You may think it's all a coincidence. I tried to believe that it was all a coincidence. I can no longer sign up to that, because that is a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy of one cock-up after another, and I just don't any longer buy it. Bakir is in Copenhagen, in Denmark, and I'd like to hear from him. Bakir, welcome.
Good evening, George, and salam alaikum to you.
Walaikum salam, go ahead.
Yeah, George, this thing about Jaish al-Fatah, I think both you and I know why the reason for they have renamed it to from al-Nusra to Jaish al-Fatah is to legitimize their operation or their terrorism in Syria, because as we see right now, Hezbollah, for example, they are making huge gains in the border area between Lebanon and Syria, and I think few entities, or certain more entities, are very much scared of Hezbollah's huge gains in the country and what it can spell for the future in the Middle East. And then there is also this, last week I saw this very sectarian interview with the Al-Nusra leader.
Yeah.
Yep. Very sectarian, yeah. And this is not the first time I see this from the same very outlet. It had also a poll a few years ago where it said, what's the problem in the crisis in Syria? And also, there's also another media here in the same Persian Gulf Arab satrapies, who also runs a very sectarian agenda in their media. And unfortunately, it has a bad image among the people.
Well, we were told in the beginning that the so-called free, so-called Syrian, so-called army were the moderates. They were wiped out and are no longer mentioned by anybody. They're a complete white elephant on which hundreds of millions of dollars were spent. Then we were told, and we're asked to believe, that Al-Qaeda are the moderates. Even though Al-Qaeda have been openly collaborating with ISIL in many different parts of the battlefield, fighting them in some places, but cooperating with them in other areas. But are we expected to believe that Al-Qaeda are the moderates? That we are entitled to be allies of Al-Qaeda, the moderates, Zawahiri, the moderate? What kind of madness is this? Zakari in Aberdeen's on the line. Let's hear from him. Zakari.
George Galloway.
Yes, go
I just
ahead.
Want to say the solution for all this crime which is happening against the people of the Middle East since 1945 up to now to 2015, and also since 22nd September 1980 up to now, and that is must establish a tribunal similar to Nuremberg Tribunal. American, they created the Nuremberg Tribunal. No, should be a tribunal against the American and the British and the France and the Israel and the Saudis and the Qataris and the Turkish government and the Kuwaitis and the Bahraini governments. Those, they caused this crime against humanity in the Middle East. And the second solution is that the old nations, that they don't want this sort of crime happening in Europe, in America, in other parts of the world, establish an army to combat this, because nobody, America, they don't combat terrorism. They are terrorists themselves. The British, they don't. The Israeli, they don't. So the people of the world, and then the world religious leader should make an emergency meeting in Qom to establish a government of the world, and given the illegitimacy of the United Nations and the Security Council. Because
All right. I'm ready to serve on that tribunal. Danny is on in Spain, and he's the last caller. Danny, go ahead.
Thank you, George, for the time to talk to me. It's a pleasure.
Welcome.
So first of all, I'd like to say I think it's multiple things. Like, as you've mentioned in the past, like for example in the Iraq-Iran war, America has funded both sides. You know, they've funded Iraq to kill Iranians and Iran to kill Iraqis. And if you look very closely at what America is doing here, for example, they're funding and arming the Kurds, they're arming the Iraqi government, they're arming also the moderates, the so-called moderates, and at the same time these fundamentalist groups. Now, what happens when you get this? You get a vacuum of fighting and a vacuum of, you know, despair, and everybody's fighting amongst each other. This causes the divide that we have in the Arab world today amongst Shia and Sunni. And, you know, ultimately, I think it's the collaboration of this kind of divide and rule mentality, and at the same time, the coordination with allies such as Israel. That's what ultimately...
Well, it can all go very fast out of control, Danny. An interesting contribution. I don't agree with all of it, but an interesting contribution. You can continue the discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. God willing, I'll be back here next week. It's been marvellous.
Hello, just comment your name and location and contact number. And just make sure that your telephone volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect your phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so I'll tell you.